When the votes were counted last week and England announced it would be leaving the European Union, markets around the world saw their values plummet. Here in the U.S., the Dow lost over 600 points in a day, the S&P was down 3.4%, and the Nasdaq Composite Index plunged a whopping 4.1%. Kai Rizdahl of Marketplace told listeners not to look at their 401ks as investors panicked, and I haven't, just for the record. So where should we be looking? Here to help answer that and examine the impact the Brexit is having on yours and my financial plans are David Jackson from the Financial Planning Association of Greater Kansas City. David, welcome back.
Hey, good morning, Steve.
Sandy Weaver is also back. She's a CPA and owner of Financial Security Advisors. Sandy, good morning to you.
Hi, Steve.
At the close of business yesterday, U.S. markets ended up for the day with the Nasdaq leading the way, but still not at pre-Brexit levels. How were things looking at the open this morning, Sandy?
The S&P was opened up about 120, and it's up about 200 now. European markets are up similarly, 1 to 2%. So we're, we're broke even on where we were on Monday, and we're recouping some of the gains we had from last Friday's surprise.
So maybe the early panic is beginning to subside here a little bit.
Absolutely. Some information's coming out.
The English slogan, keep calm and carry on, didn't seem so popular after the vote results were announced. What causes a market to lose 600 points in a day, David? I mean, who's panicking out there?
Well, you know, you have to think about how everything is so interconnected these days that, you know, something overseas does affect the rest of the world because of globalization. And this is kind of a classic example, though, that I think when we see the average person was not paying attention to Brexit at all. The average person had no idea what that meant.
They still don't know what Brexit means.
Yeah, they still don't, really. Yeah. And then so they see the news on Friday and they see the markets plunging and the media's making a big deal about how much it's dropped. And so they start paying attention. Then they see it on, they see that on Friday. Then on Monday, they see the market drops again. And they think, okay, I need to do something. Mm-hmm. You know, something's going on. I'm not quite sure what to do, but I need to do something. And so a lot of times people will make a decision based on this little information that they've gotten, and they say, let me get out of the market until things calm down. And then we have, you know, as resulted Tuesday and Wednesday rebounds, and they miss out on it. So it's so important for the average investor to stay calm. There's some really sophisticated people that know how to take advantage of all this volatility, but the average person just needs to kind of stay put.
So both of you, were your phones ringing pretty heavily on Friday and Monday or not really? You're shaking your head no, Sandy.
Yeah, no, not at all. I mean, most of the portfolios and people we work for, they have diversified investments. So we have some overseas stocks and bonds, but we have a majority here in the U.S. Our economy here is stronger than overseas.
Yeah. How about you, David?
I did get a few calls, not a lot. I was expecting to get more, and I was happened to be out of town at a conference at the time. So I kept checking in with my assistant to find out, okay, so are people calling me? And she said, that's not too bad. So
when the market drops like this, I mean, is it the result of individuals or more a case of traders and dealers and hedge fund managers sort of taking over here?
I think you have a little bit of both. So you have the average individual who gets fearful, feels like they need to do something. And then there's a lot of trading triggers where the machines kind of take over once the market hits a certain level. It's like the machines just say sell, you know. Mm-hmm. So you have a little bit of both going on. But a lot of it is just emotional decisions, just making emotional decisions without understanding the big picture.
Sandy, a lot of this, it seems to me, is due to the fact that the Brexit vote, the way it turned out, was unexpected. The market certainly was aware this big vote was going on, but the latest thinking heading into the vote was that the thing that Great Britain would stay in the EU, and that didn't turn out to be the case.
Yeah, that was the assumption. Even Behrens, I read that on Saturdays, but even Behrens didn't even start focusing on it till 3 weeks ago. And one of the interesting things were that the polling mechanisms in Britain really aren't that reliable. I mean, they totally missed.
Or anywhere, for that matter.
Well, yeah. But they did miss Cameron's, you know, previous election by a wide margin. So, you know, Behrens was saying the betting pools in Britain are a little bit more accurate than the polling surveys that they have. So it was a surprise factor that really, you know, caused the wild swing.
So what's affected, David, by the steep declines here? Is it just stocks, just bonds? Is it both? What happened?
It's more stocks than bonds because bonds are considered a safe investment.
More steadier, right?
Yeah. So if people get scared, a lot of times what they're doing is moving out of stocks into bonds or into cash to protect themselves. So it was the stock market that really felt the negative ramifications.
So is this chaos theory in action, Sandy? I mean, the English butterfly flaps its wings and sets off a financial hurricane. Is that what this is?
Yes and no. I mean, we are so much a global economy nowadays. You know, the U.S., we get 30% of our revenues from overseas on our companies. But, for example, Europe, they get 50% of their revenues by exporting goods and services. You know, so when China hiccups, they're the second largest economy. You know, we notice right away. We don't have that great of exports over to China. But the EU, everybody is fearful of what it might spread to, the contagion factor on it. So it is very much a global economy nowadays, whether we want that or not. And same goes for Britain people.
Let me get our listeners involved here. Was Brexit the last straw for you? Are you looking to pull your money from the stock market and put it under the mattress? Have you had enough? Our phone number here, 816-235-2888. Again, 816-235-2888. Or you can tweet us at KCUR up to date. How badly did Brexit affect other markets compared to ours around the globe, David?
Well, actually, it was probably a larger effect overseas than it did affect the United States. The United States is still considered probably the most stable economy right now. So even though we did take a hit, it wasn't nearly as severe as on the international.
You know, it strikes me that Chairwoman Janet Yellen was cautious at the last Fed meeting. She said that uncertainty about the outcome of the British vote kept the Fed from raising interest rates. How likely is that to continue, do you think?
Very likely. If you look at what the market anticipates now, no one thinks the Fed is going to be raising rates, even, you know, 0.25%. This year, there's a slight possibility built into the markets that they might do so in December.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, central banks are not ours, but overseas are more likely to add more stimulus, if anything.
The rates remain so low, Sandy, that the Fed doesn't have much room to bolster the American economy if it continues to struggle, right? I mean, are there any other tools in the Fed box right now?
Well, they can slide back and start reviving, you know, quantitative easing, where they go in and buy assets and, you know, add liquidity to the system. That's what the ECB, European Central Bank, is doing right now. They've been buying not only government bonds, but corporate bonds. They just started last month.
Yeah.
We could do something like that, but our economy's holding up pretty well. We're in a different situation than Europe.
Let's go to some phone calls here. 816-235-2888. Well, we want to know, was Brexit the last straw for you? Are you going to pull out of the market and stay the heck with it for a while? 816-235-2888. Flo from Kansas City, Kansas. Good morning, Flo.
Good morning, host Steve and Des. My question is, how do the guests envision England departing the EU will affect the global social economic fabric for all classes of people for the future? Some positive effects and some negative effects.
How will this vote affect other folks? Yeah.
One of the companies that makes predictions on global GDP growth, you know, what we all produce for goods and services, not just here in the U.S., but overseas, the Brexit was estimated we were going to be at 3.6% this year. They took it back down to 3.4%. So from a global perspective, not that much.
It's kind of interesting, though. The bigger picture is not just England leaving the European Union, but will there be some other countries that follow? You know, so there's a fear that maybe Italy follows, maybe Spain, and then if France decides to get out of the European Union, that's an entire game changer because the European Union as an entity is the largest market out there. And then you start taking countries out of it, it makes it smaller. So nobody knows how does that affect the global picture.
What would happen if that begins to unfold?
Well, so all the like the United States has a trading agreement with the European Union. If now you don't have the major players in the European Union anymore, then they have to renegotiate with each individual country. So we don't know how that affects things, but it does have an effect.
Should the individual investor, David, care if the EU begins to unravel?
If it does, it's going to have some effect on everybody's pocketbook. Yes.
So because
uncertainty usually takes the market in a negative direction.
Right, right.
And nobody knows where that ends up. So it's one of those things. It's nothing you can do about it, but it does impact us all.
Okay, back to some phone calls here. Let's go to Zane from the Hyde Park neighborhood. Zane, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. I was considering actually dumping a lot of money into my 401k in the near future, simply because the markets are so low. And I guess I'm just wondering if I should wait for EU to start to unravel or kind of do it now and see that as a window.
Zane, I think you should dump money into my 401k. You know, let's just be honest about this. What should Zane do? Sandy, what do you think?
I think he might nibble some now because I think the possibility is good that the EU remains intact. But you might also not spend all of it now. You might use a strategy that's called dollar cost averaging. And so put some of the money to work now, but then do as David suggests and take a wait and see attitude. And let's see. You know, Britain over these next couple of years is going to be negotiating with the EU in terms of what they get and what they lose.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the benefits of belonging to the EU are pretty significant. So if I'm Italy, if I'm Norway, I'm going to, before I even think about tiptoeing, you know, and exiting myself, I'm going to see how Britain, what they walk away with. And I think we'll find that the benefits of the EU are there. But it might, you know, if I'm investing into this, you know, I want to make sure I haven't, you know, dumped it all in next week and just, you know, hope for the best. You know,
so you would measure this out slowly, it sounds like, if you're Zane.
This year and next. Yeah.
That makes sense, Zane?
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. So just kind of, you know, decide on an amount that I'm planning on dumping into it and then dumping in over the next 4 to 5 months instead of dumping it all now.
Yeah, awesome. Or a little longer, and then make sure you pay attention to headlines, see what's going on.
Yeah, the other point,
absolutely,
though, is that it's going to be a slow process, as if the EU does unwind, we're talking about a few years before that actually happens.
Mm.
I mean, it's going to be a couple of years before Britain actually leaves the EU. So I wouldn't, you know, base your total investment decisions on what's going to happen to the EU, because nothing's going to happen to the EU anytime soon.
Has your faith in the market, Zane, has it waned a little bit given the tumult of recent years? Have you had enough of it, or sounds like you're still willing to put money in there?
Sure. I've kind of had a wait-and-see attitude the entire time, just because it has been so up and down. But every time there's a big dip in the market, I see that as every time it's been a big dip, I've considered putting a lot of money into it. But this is the first time that I'm seriously contemplating pulling the trigger, I suppose.
Yeah. Okay. Well, good luck, Zane. I hope it goes well.
Thank you very much.
You know, my advisor always tells me don't panic, you know, and I don't. But, you know, is there a point, David, where I should seriously consider bailing? I mean, in the best interest of your clients, is there ever a time when you'd say get out while you can, still salvage something, or are we far from that right now?
Well, what I would say is it depends more on your circumstances than the circumstances of the overall market.
If I'm close to retirement, for instance.
Yeah, if you're getting real close to retirement, or you've had some major life event that has changed, that changes your thought pattern on your investments or your time frames on your investment. But, you know, if you're working with a financial advisor, I'm assuming he's already put you in a well-diversified portfolio that makes sense for you, understanding that there's going to be some risk inherent in that portfolio, and we're going to deal with the ups and downs along the way. But, you know, if your life circumstance changes, I'll have that conversation with clients, or sometimes I'll just find out a client just did not have the stomach for volatility.
Yeah.
Where when we initially met, they said, yeah, I'm an aggressive investor and I want to make as much money as I can. And as soon as they see the market drop and they're ready to panic, that tells me, well, you're not an aggressive investor. I need to position you in a way that these ups and downs aren't going to affect you nearly as much.
You know, Sandy, I roll with this stuff pretty well. I've been through a lot of ups and downs as my career has unfolded when it comes to the markets. But I got to tell you, I look at my 401k going back 2.5 years, 3 years now, man, it has been within $10,000, even though I continue contributing to it. It's just been stuck, you know, in a holding pattern, and it's a little discouraging.
I understand. Returns have been very mediocre the last 2 to 3 years. But if you know, we all have short memories. If you go back and look at 2013, 2014, you know, we had double-digit returns off of diversified portfolios. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, unfortunately, the market doesn't, you know, The market is up and down on average, and you really have to take a 10, 20-year time frame. You know, but over time, the markets and diversified portfolios do make money. The alternative, you know, I think David's right. One of the biggest risks is, you know, someone who pulls out when you're at a bottom and you know, you miss a bounce back up.
Mm-hmm.
But it does, you know, we are probably more likely to hit a bear market in the next 1 or 3 years versus having double-digit returns again. But the point is, you know, you don't know. So you have to have an investing strategy that lets you, you know, move forward with what you do know.
If you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date, and we're talking with our smart money experts about what to do in the wake of Brexit, what it might mean for you, given all the market turmoil of late. David, let's say I don't want to wait this one out. Where can I really go with my money? Because as we just talked about, stocks aren't doing so well. There's treasury bonds, I guess. Is it less volatile there, or how are they doing right now?
Well, bonds in general are nice and steady. You know, but they're not.
But not great returns.
Not
obviously.
Great returns. And then treasury bonds are even less. You know, the riskier the bond, the higher the yield, basically. So, and then cash is not paying anything. So.
What's a 10-year treasury paying me right now?
What,
1.4.
Not going to get rich going that way.
No.
Yeah, especially if the cost of living is growing at about 2.5.
You know,
you're kind of falling behind. So it kind of creates a difficult situation right now.
If I'm an opportunist, Sandy, would now be the time to start bargain hunting and adding to my portfolio that way?
Yeah, you could. You could take a look at what's really been hit hard the last, you know, week, and you're looking at financials and transportation areas. Anything that's sensitive to a good economy versus, you know, a not good economy globally. But, you know, U.S. financials are, you know, far sounder than overseas. But if you really have a stomach for risk, you know, financials overseas have been hit pretty hard on this. And they were already trading at a low PE compared to our market. So, you know, if you think you have an inside track, that might be an area.
What about the overall economy these days, David? What's the picture like for American companies doing business outside the U.S. these days?
Well, overall, it's been slow and steady growth. I mean, but it is growing. It's just not growing fast. And so I think that's the frustration, is that we had gotten used to 3% and 4% growth, and now we're at somewhere around 2% or so. So it's a little frustrating. You know, last couple of years, the stock markets just barely moved, even though there's been a lot of volatility along the way. We still, like you're saying with your 401k, it really hasn't moved much. It's just been volatile in that time frame. But the overall economy is just doing nice and steady right now.
We're an impatient people, and I'm wondering if maybe that's part of the problem that people like me have. When I look at my 401k, David just said, Sandy, slow and steady has been the name of the game. Maybe that's not so bad.
You know, really it's not, because, you know, double-digit gains are far above average. You know, normal average is closer to 6 or 7%. So, you know, when you come in at a 13, 14% portfolio return, you know you're going to have 2 or 3 years that go on the bottom side of the average line.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then we're in the middle of that now, and then you're right. You know, we do forget that.
My favorite math term is a reversion to the mean, which, you know, if the stock market averages 10% per year over its lifetime, and we've been averaging, you know, 1 or 2% the last couple of years, eventually it's going to go over 10% to get it back to that 10% average.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you have to, you know, deal with the good times to get to, or deal with the bad times to get to the good times.
I always appreciate those complicated financial terms that you use over there, David. Very impressive. I like that a lot.
Thank you very much.
Well, I appreciate the good advice for what to do with your money in the wake of Brexit here. David Jackson from the Financial Planning Association of Greater Kansas City. Sandy Weaver, a CPA and owner of Financial Security Advisors. Thanks for the good conversation. I appreciate it.
Thank you,
Steve.
Good to be
with you.